Akira Sakano of Kamikatsu's NPO, Zero Waste Academy. Could you start with telling us a little bit about how you got involved with that project, Akira?
Okay, so thank you, Joy. So I was a student at the university majoring in the environmental policy. I'm myself really like birds and nature, and then I got very interested into the environmental issues through the animal protection, or the birds protection to be specific. Then I got to meet one of my friend, Terumi, during my university. She was also measuring the environmental policy. Then I got very curious because not many students were that much involved in the environmental topics, and she was really one of the few. So I asked her, so why are you interested in the environmental policy? And then she said, because my town, my hometown, is the one doing zero waste. And then my mother is the one who really started that movement. So I was like, wow, what is that, the zero waste?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the first contact with her town, which is the Kamikatsu, which I'm working on right now. Then I visited this town during the summer holidays to also visit my friend Terumi. And then I got to meet so many people here, not only the ones who really, you know, drove the first move, but also people in the town who's now basically everyone's involved in the zero waste. And then I was very impressed by hearing from the people how each one of them has different ownership towards the zero waste movement. Of course, like, not everyone agreed in the beginning, or not everyone really, you know, was interested. But at the same time, like, they really take this zero waste initiative from different perspective in the way that they feel that they're still, you know, a responsibility for this. So that's why I was impressed, and then I thought that would be very interesting to be in this community. So.
Yeah, you've really uprooted your life and settled into Kamikatsu, because you're not originally from there, right?
No, I'm originally from Nishinomiya City, which is next to Kobe.
Mm-hmm. You have a nice direct commute back to Kobe. It's not too far, right?
Not too far, that's true.
2 hours?
To add that the distance from Tokushima City to here, maybe 3 hours.
Three hours, yeah. So when I came there from Hiroshima, it took about 4 hours, 4.5 hours. But when when I was at the Kamikatsu office, I met someone who's from Nagasaki. And she said it takes her 6 hours. So I didn't feel so bad.
True.
Yeah. So when you do your international conferences, where do you fly from? Where's the nearest airport?
Nearest international airport is the Osaka, Kansai International Airport. Or actually, I fly from Tokushima Airport to Haneda or Narita in Tokyo,
okay.
Then to fly out from Tokyo. Either way, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not too bad. So Are you enjoying living in such a small town after Kobe? Kobe is kind of a big city, right?
Yeah, true. But actually, before coming to Kamikatsu, I was working in Mongolia and then the Philippines. So it's just like changing location in a way.
Yeah.
But like going to somewhere new is always kind of similar. It doesn't matter like the conditions or like what's it like there as a location, but it's more about like who you work with, or you know, who you live with.
Yeah.
Then that's what matters. So and, it's really nice.
And when me and my son visited Kamikatsu, we both felt like we could live there. It was such a beautiful place, and we wish we had longer. So we'll definitely come back and visit again.
Yeah. Please do.
And you said you were interested in birds. Have you?
Yes.
You studied birds in Mongolia and all the other places you went to?
Not exactly. I was in totally different fields in Mongolia. I was working with NGO for youth development there. Then in the Philippines, I was with logistics. So basically, I'm changing my career a lot.
Well, if you have a chance, I grew up in Hawaii. Hawaii has beautiful birds as well. But the most amazing birds I've ever seen were in Australia. Just
yes, definitely.
Such colorful, amazing birds are the normal birds there. So if you're interested in birds, I didn't notice any birds in Kamikatsu, but maybe wrong season, huh?
True. They're quite unique birds living here as well.
So are there? Okay.
I enjoy that also.
Well, that's good. So that was a bit about your personal story, about why you ended up in Kamikatsu. And of course, now you're working together with Azuma-san, who you met at university, right?
Yes, I do.
So both of you are kind of the heads of the Zero Waste Academy, is that right? The MBO?
Yes.
And you work in collaboration with the city office as well as local people in the community, is that right?
Yes. So, yeah. So in a nonprofit organization, Zero Waste Academy, we are the one actually get outsourced from the town office, Kamikatsu town office, about managing the waste collection center and also to support the local people to segregate their waste and then store them, then pass it on to the recycling operators. So we are the one really managing the center of the waste collection and segregation. Yeah. So we, of course, have to work with them a lot.
So if people want to come and visit Kamikatsu and learn more about Zero Waste, you folks are the ones they should contact, right?
Yeah, definitely. We can be the window or the gate person to connect you with other people here.
Yeah, that's so important. I as someone researching sustainability, that was really important for me in making a decision to come to Kamikatsu, because when I research other areas, it's really hard to find out how to go there, how to visit, right? How to do
Definitely.
The tour. But you guys made it so easy, so I really appreciate that. And the tour was really interesting. Could you describe a little bit about, like, the tour or what people would see or do while they're on the tour?
Yeah, so we basically have like 1 hour basic tour to do the introduction about how the Kamikatsu town itself started the zero waste policy and then how it operates right now. So first of all, we give the quick introduction about the history. So we were doing all this open incineration outside. We had lots of issues with the dumping, and then we couldn't use any more the incinerator and these kind of histories. Then we also take you to the collection center, waste collection center, then tour you around how we actually segregate together with the people in the town, how it's, why it's segregated in that detail. Right now we have 45 different categories of the bins, and then you can actually see around what's the difference, and then where it goes, what it will be, then how much it will cost or earns and everything. Then we also show you not only the waste collection center itself, but also the reuse shop. So we have something called Kuru Kuru Shop and the Kuru Kuru Craft Center. So Kuru Kuru Shop is the place that we collect things from the people in the town that they don't use anymore but still usable. So people can actually bring things there and then take things for free for, you know, reusing purposes. Then also we have a place is called Kuru Kuru Craft Center, which is for the upcycling. So we remake the textiles, all kimonos, the traditional clothes, and then the carp flag that we use for the Children's Day celebration. So the grannies are the one who's working there, so you can also enjoy making something with them, or actually even looking at it, it's quite beautiful. So
Yeah, that was great.
I was
very impressed with the Kuru Kuru shop inside the waste facility, and there was so many useful and beautiful things, and you had said that it was successful because more was going out and coming in. It was quite a balance. It wasn't just dropping off, but people were using it. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Every year, around 80 to 90% of things brought in are taken away by someone else. So actually, people are using it. Yeah,
that's great. I heard a story from Japan for Sustainability's NPO, you know, the website, Japan for, about the Edo era. And during the Edo period, there was that kind of mentality about reusing the same product over and over. It's such a great Japanese concept, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
You're trying to bring back the Edo. I love that.
That's true. And then especially if you're living in the rural area, like in Kamikatsu, you get to see lots of like our culture or the tradition even, that people maximized what we have as a resources, right? So you try to reuse everything, try to make things in a different way so that we can actually not buying something new or not getting something new, but we can something, we can make something out of what we already have. So yeah, that's quite great culture we have.
Yeah, and I saw that in one of your presentations as well. You mm-hmm. were saying pretty much everything in your life is from the local area or mm-hmm. reused from the shop, or,
yeah,
you know, like you have a very low impact lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying. Well, like, I need to travel a lot where I actually produce more impact on the world or carbon footprint. But right now, whenever, if I'm in the town, then, like, I can buy local vegetable, local food. Then also, I can get things from the reuse shop, which I don't need to even pay. And then also, I know that when I let go whatever I don't need, then I can bring it to the real shop, or even it's get recycled and I know where it goes, so I can actually see my impact as well. So.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And although, yeah, you know, all the travel does have a carbon footprint, you getting your message out around the world is a really important part of what you're doing in Kamikatsu.
Yeah, definitely. So I really hope that everyone can actually, you know, visualize what they are making or what they are doing, because like in the environmental issue or this kind of field, what's more difficult is that people cannot, like, you know, make any ownership about what's going on because it's invisible. Like, for example, carbon footprint, you cannot see, right? So that's why it's difficult to change people's mindset, actions, while they everyone basically knows that, you know, importance of the environmental topics. But that's why I'd like to let people know, like, you know, how they can actually act from the small things and then to make a change in somewhat way. Yeah.
Yeah. I was, Azuma-san did such a great job during the tour of explaining mm-hmm. everything to us. And I think one of the things that she said, which was so memorable for me, was that usually in Japan, people just separate into burnable and not burnable. You know, mm-hmm. but burnable is such a big part of garbage culture in Japan. But of yep. course, for you in Kamikatsu, there is no burnable.
No. So
you, like you said, you have that responsibility. When you mm-hmm. buy something, you're going to have to deal with it. You're going to have to deal with the container. So
yeah.
the mindset is completely different.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we call the category, like, no choice but to burn instead of burnable, because, like, if you say burnable, basically everything is burnable, right? But, like, of course, within that category, there are so many other things that you can still recycle, still you can even not making into the same product, but still use in the, some other ways. So that's why we don't call it anymore burnable. But we see it from either it's recyclable or non-recyclable. So it's a different perspective.
Right. So when you're touring the waste separation areas, there is some landfill, but very few things are landfilled. You're working with the companies to send back some of the products, as well as you're working with the garbage pickup, I guess, to pay for some and to get some money. But all of that is detailed and on the all of the signage, and that must be a really big job. I was very yeah. impressed.
Yes, because of course not everyone's looking at it, but at the same time, if we actually show them, then they can actually have the visibility. Then what's happening in the bigger cities is that like they try to segregate, but for example, like, they don't see where it goes, so they don't actually trust the process already lying in the society. So we thought it's really important to actually show them, like, if they're interested, that's where it actually goes and what it will be. So they even, they can see the price of how much it earns or it costs. So they can also see their impacts in the pricing.
And that changes, right? The,
yes.
The price that you would get for aluminum changes over time. So I noticed yep. on the poster, there's many different places. How often do you have to change the pricing?
Basically, the contract is annual basis. Okay. So the town office contract with the operator annually. So if the price changed, then that needs to be annual basis. Yeah.
And then I was also very impressed by your communication with companies to try to help change the design a little bit.
Yes. So while we are doing the end side of the waste management, of course, like only segregating and recycling does not solve the main issues. So of course, some of them cannot be recycled only because the material is very difficult. Or if you cannot separate the materials from the products, then mixed materials cannot be recycled. So that's why we need to also advocate towards the companies who's already producing it. So the production and the product design itself needs to be changed, otherwise we can't do much. So that's why we are trying to work with the company, not just to point out the issues, but also to work together to redesign what we can do to change the difficulty of waste management. So. Mm-hmm.
There's some companies abroad which use the cradle-to-cradle design. They're planning to either take back the waste material and reuse it themselves, or it's something that can be reused. Is that a concept that's accepted by Japanese companies, you think?
Yes, slowly, I'd say. Cradle-to-cradle concept is not that common yet in Japan, but having the producer responsibility itself has been there as a regulation as well. So for example, in Japan, all the companies who is producing products with the packaging, they basically need to include the packaging recycling cost in the price as well. So in that way, they are the one responsible for like paying and putting up the process to collect it, to recycle it. However, it's not fully implemented in the way, it's still the waste management is lies with the municipalities. So it's not mean that the producer themselves is the one actually collecting the packaging. So you don't actually see the end results, right? So that's why this time also we're working with one of the consumer goods producer that helped them to actually collect their products packaging in Kamikatsu's waste collection center. So they also get to see the collected packaging, and then they're the one who's collecting the packaging from us to recycle them into different like new plastic materials, new products. So they're kind of trying and test out what they can do.
That's great. And you also had a local festival, and you were you were supplying reusable containers.
Yes,
that's a great idea.
Yeah. Yes, so especially during the festivals, we have lots of like shops coming in, then like they sell food with what like single use plates or the cups, and then that's huge waste we produce. So that's why we are renting out the reusable cups or plates or containers for free, and then together with the event producer or the owner, we wash them together so that they can actually reuse, and then so they could reduce lots of waste produced during the festival. So for example, last year during our town's summer festival, we only produced less than one container, like less than half of the one container of like no choice but to burn waste. So everything else was either reduced because of the reusable plates or get recycled because they segregated at the event. So that's great.
Yeah, that's great. And people who haven't visited Kamikatsu probably don't know, you don't really have supermarkets or convenience stores. So in some ways, that's how a lot of people recycle their products. They take it back to the supermarket or convenience store has bins. But that must be a really big help for Kamikatsu in a way, because people don't buy too much of what they don't need, and then you don't have too many new containers or products coming in. But that must be a difficult issue for new residents when they think about coming to live in Kamikatsu. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, actually, it's not only for the new residents, but for basically everyone. Only because we don't have really a local shop that supplies different type of the products. Most of them needs to go to the cities to buy in the bulk.
Mm-hmm.
Then like basically, but in Japan, we don't really have a huge like bulk size products. Like everything is in smaller package, even they say it's bulk. So basically what's happening is that while we produce like vegetables and rice and these agricultural products locally, that does not supply everyone in like the enough amount, and then anything else you need to buy outside. So basically we are quotation importing waste or the packaging from outside and recycling by ourselves, right? So that's kind of challenging in the way, because if people cannot access to the store very frequently, it means they tend to buy more than they actually need, because they are afraid of, you know, lacking on something, so they tend to store, right? Then in the end, sometimes expired food, expired products coming in as a waste. So that kind of influencing the consumption habit instead of like try not to buy more. So that's kind of, yeah, contradiction that you may find. Yeah.
That's hard. In one of your talks, you're talking about the population decline. And
yes.
I think Kamikatsu has such wonderful conditions in many ways, but just like other inaka countryside mm-hmm. areas in Japan, you're really suffering the population decline. Has it become any, like, is it steady recently or is it still on the decline?
Actually, like, we cannot stop the decline of the elderly population by either, of course, passing away, but at the same time, since when they have hard time living by themselves, they move out either to the elderly care center home or to the their children's home somewhere else in the cities. So we can't stop them. Then, but at the same time, if you are just looking into the number of people who's leaving from the town, not the natural, you know, passing away, versus people who's coming into the town as their own decision, the balance is getting a bit equal. So if you don't see the natural, you know, born and passing away number, and they're just looking into the social change of the population number, we are kind of trying to keep it up in the way that we make it stable. But still, as a whole number, of course, we can't stop declining our population.
Yeah.
So it's still a quite big challenge, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, with the, I was impressed by visiting some of the new restaurants and shops that
yes.
came because of the zero waste policy,
right.
And they really embraced it, you know, like Rise and Win, the fantastic local brewed beer, and then the Cafe Polestar. You know, you have some new businesses coming, which I know is popular with visitors, and hopefully also helps with the local community employment, or, you know, just gives a nice place for local people to go. But you also have some great local products. I mean, you have the beautiful views. You're one of the top 100 most beautiful villages in Japan, right?
Yeah. And then the rice terraces.
Rice terraces. You've got tea. You're growing really nice tea. My son and I were saying it's kind of like a jasmine. It reminds us of jasmine tea. Jasmine
yeah,
green tea
actually,
mix.
It's actually fermented tea, so it's also good for your health.
It's wonderful. Yeah. We really fell in love with that. And you can get that on Rakuten. I ordered some more. Or can we order that from you guys? Do you have an online store as well?
yeah. Actually, Terumi is owning the Cafe Polestar, right? And they have the online shop as well. So you can order from there.
For Kamikatsu tea? Okay, great.
Yeah.
We love that. We'll check it out. And you said local rice as well?
So we have rice terraces, so they are also promoting not only like buying the rice itself, but also like being a rice terrace owner. So they basically come for like rice planting and cultivation, but meanwhile the original owner is the one who's taking care of, but you know, you still pay for the amount so that they can maintain the rice terraces. So we have such system as well.
That's great. And I you're not so far from Osaka in the big city, so there must be a lot of attraction to people who live in the big city to escape to such a beautiful area as well.
Definitely. Yeah, that would be a very good chance for them to also breathe in the nature, better air, get relaxed.
Wonderful. So as you are such a busy, busy woman, how do you balance your commitments at work and all the things you want to do with enjoying your life? Is that, I know it's hard for everybody.
Good question. Well, yeah, like,
any secrets
trying to make
for
a
us?
I wouldn't say I'm doing it well yet. I'm trying to schedule a bit better this time. Like last year's hectic that I got to travel a lot abroad as well. But I'm trying to like just schedule it in advance so that like I can also balance not only my personal life and work life, but also like how long I stay in the town and how long outside. So that's also needs to be balanced. Otherwise, I need to keep the connection with the town itself. So then I really like to also communicate more with the locals. Also, I get to learn a lot from them, how to, for example, cut down the trees or like how to make a bag out of the rice straws and stuff. So yeah, that's the fun part of my life. So
you've got such an interesting life and interesting perspective. Please write a book so that we can all read and learn from you.
Actually, we'd like to publish something on like our history itself, like about how the survey started, how it's been managed, and then what it means for our town. So that should come out.
That'd be great. And another way to promote what great work you guys are doing and inspire other areas as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
That's great. I think I've asked a bunch of, what is the actual percentage now? Because you're trying to go for zero waste by 2020, but it's so difficult to reach that.
Yeah, definitely. Right now, our recycling rate is 79.3%, so almost 80%. And then it actually does not include our organic waste, which is actually composted 100%. So combining that around more than 80% of what we produce as a waste, get either recycled or composted. Then aside from that, we also have a bunch of reusing. So as a percentage, you can guess. And then also the other achievement is that, so if we compare the price for managing the waste itself, if we burn everything we produce right now versus what we're actually spending on recycling everything, it's like 1/6. So it could be 6 times more if we actually continue burning waste. Wow. So that's also an achievement for the town itself, because like we can spend that money for something else, right? But at the same time, of course, as you mentioned, zero waste is such a huge ambition. And then, but actually what's important is that we don't actually see that we have zero waste in the end. What's more important is that we actually ambition zero. And then that's where you create so many, you know, different strategy, being very out of the box to do something new. And then like maybe we achieve like 99.9%, let's see. But I'm fine with like, you know, not having like 100% recycle, because first of all, recycling is not the goal, and then second of all, it's more about waste management together coming with the lifestyle change. So not only looking at the waste only, but also from there we really need to like design our lifestyle and then the social systems, maybe instead of like relying on the huge supermarket in the city, we may better to make some like local shop more inside the town, and that can support the local consumption without packaging or something. So all this kind of like lifestyle design need to come in to really support for the zero waste ambition. So let's see what we can do in our base.
No, that's a great motto, right? It's about changing your lifestyle and designing a sustainable lifestyle. It's not just about 2020, we're going to hit zero waste or not, because the journey is so much more important.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. For cities that are trying to get started with some kind of more sustainable lifestyle or trying to change, what would you suggest as the most important step to take?
Right. So first of all, if you like to work as a city or the town or the community towards zero waste, then first of all, like start talking about it as a community, right? So everyone needs to have that kind of ambition or same kind of purpose in themselves to agree on, okay, we want to see zero waste society or zero waste community. Like otherwise, you know, dealing with the waste is not the fun thing. So everyone needs to have that kind of community engagement or talking with each other. Then that's the time they can decide on what they want to see, right? Either they want to say zero waste as an ambition, or they can also say that, you know, not looking at the waste maybe directly in the beginning, but at the same time, maybe starting with Kurukuru shop is also one chance that, you know, they exchange or share items that they don't use anymore. Then that can lead also towards the next step, looking directly at the waste management as well. So it can be different steps forward. But in the beginning, people need to start talking.
That's great advice. I know your community 100% is reusing the organic waste at home. And for me, it was like, of course, obviously, but I think for many cities and communities, that is a really big step.
That's true.
Start to compost.
So, yeah, exactly. But if you're looking at the waste production, most of the cities or the towns, there's 30 to 40% of waste is organic. So if you can reduce that, then that's a huge reduction as well. So implementing composting machines, supporting as a subsidies to the citizens to buy composting machines, or also even some cities started with cutting water out of the organic waste before they throwing it away. So that can reduce a lot of amount, the volume of the waste itself. So some these kind of small steps can work as well.
Yeah, great. I think that's about it. Thank you so much for talking to me and sharing your ideas and inspiration for us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you also. That was nice talking to you again.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll come and visit Kamikatsu soon.
Yeah, please do.
Thanks, Akira.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.